Hello, Kanto Nation.
Yellow here.
And Blue, just wanting to thank you guys for all the support and love that you have been showing KantoCast. It is seriously the most awesome thing ever.
As you continue to support and love KantoCast, we can continue to grow and spread new content.
And we're already breaking into the video scene. The podcast, naturally, is still happening. To keep us going, be sure to like, subscribe, favorite, retweet, all the stuff you do on the internet.
And we'll be sure to continue to give you great content.
But for right now, please enjoy this week's episode of KantoCast. Kanto Nation, good morning, if you're listening to this in the morning. I know we're recording this in the morning, because crickets refuse to shut up at night.
Yeah.
So we're making a very special edition of Coffee with KantoCast this morning.
Lots and lots of coffee.
I'm Blue.
I'm Yellow.
Yellow may have just woken up, I don't know. I've been up for a while, so I hope I don't sound tired. Either way, we are here bringing episode 20 at your ears, super early. This morning. Not really that early. Earlier than usual.
It's early for me.
It's early for Yellow. Not for me. I'm always up. But that doesn't matter, because you're probably listening to this at like 5 in the afternoon. Because that's what happens.
And you've already had your coffee.
I always have the best intentions of getting it up early, and then the podcast always goes up late, because reasons and such. Anywho, what's going on this episode? Episode 20. What's happening? We have news and stuff that we're going to talk about, as always. We have an all-new edition of Try Not To Be Terrible, hashtag TNTBT, if you know what that means. If not, it's where I try to not be awful on Battlespot.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
That was the entire thought behind it. We also have a new team review this week. We'll get into that a little bit later. And we have the GBA final to cover, but not going to do that just yet, because we actually have a special guest joining us a little bit later in the episode. Who is it?
You probably know if you follow us on Twitter.
You probably... Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. We'll see. He's been on before. Spoilers.
I know that. Do they know that?
Probably, if you've been listening. So, news. Let's kick it off. As you guys know, we have been trying to hit 600 followers to get a 3DS for Yellow. We were debating if we wanted to do new 3DS or just the standard XL. Now I think we're just going to get the standard XL, because the NFC Amiibo reader for the regular 3DS, it's a little compatible device, is now available. Well, it's not available. You can pre-order it. It'll be available next month. I think the release date is actually September 25th, so that's coming out soon. It used to be that the new 3DS XL was the only way that you could get Amiibo onto the 3DS games, but now you don't have to worry about that, because you have the little
gadget thingy.
Yeah.
It's like a little platform with a NFC sensor on it.
And it's super affordable. It is $20 or $19.99 if you're conservative about the penny. It's actually available for pre-order on GameStop.com right now.
We already got ours.
We did.
I'm so happy that neither one of us have the new 3DS. And that way, I don't feel like one of us has an advantage over the other.
I kind of need it, though.
Well, that's like, true.
No, because my 3DS has had trouble connecting to the internet.
Although, I don't recently know if that's just our...
It could be the router.
Yeah.
I hope it's the router.
If not, your 3DS.
Although, they're both about the same amount or a place, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Aren't they both about the same age, maybe?
No.
No, is our router a lot older?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody who's tech savvy who's listening right now, that router that I am using is about 7 years old.
Yeah, probably. Nah.
I'm going to say 6 or 7 years old. So you tell me, if it's been on every single day for 6 to 7 years, what are the odds that it's actually still halfway functional? And should I just replace it?
We probably will replace it.
We probably have to get a new one eventually anyway. So, yeah. So that's that. But the NFC reader is cool because it's super affordable. You can juice up your current 3DS if you want, and you don't have to get a new one to use the Amiibo if you're lucky enough to get a good one, which we've actually had some good luck with Amiibos.
Yeah.
This is not news relevant, but we've got some more obscure ones. Yellow really wanted a Rosalina, so we got Rosalina, and I should have an Ike, but they got sent to the wrong address.
Hopefully we'll get it so in the next couple days.
They're sending me a new one, I guess. So salty about that. We got both versions of Pit, just because I was online at the right time. Shout out to Amiibo Alerts, because I follow them, and they are the ones that tell me. I really just want the Fire Emblem ones. That's all I want.
Good luck.
The unicorns, basically, are what I'm after. So yeah, you can pre-order the Amiibo 3DS reader if you want. We will link it in the description for the pre-order for your convenience, I suppose. Why not? GameStop doesn't pay us, but that's okay. Doesn't matter. Speaking of stuff you can get online, but not in the US, Nintendo in the UK is going to start offering a loot crate service. That's really awesome, because I kind of want it. I wonder if you're in the US if you can get it.
If they ship internationally, you probably could.
Oh, now I have to look that up.
I didn't see too much information about it yet.
Yeah, I didn't either. All I know is that it's awesome, and I want it. And if we have any UK listeners, please subscribe to that.
Let us know how awesome it is, so we can be jealous. Tell me what it's like.
Yeah, I want to know. I really want this so badly.
You were thinking about getting a different one at one point, but that didn't...
The box, the monthly?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was looking at the 1UP box, and that's mostly because it was more, like, game-oriented.
But Nintendo-oriented.
Yeah. Honestly, if they had, like, a Nintendo crate service, I would get it in a heartbeat, because it's really all I'm interested in. I know, like, stuff like Loot Crate is cool, but I'm not into that many facets of the nerd world that I feel like I couldn't appreciate all that was in it. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I don't really do, like, DC, Marvel comic books and stuff like that.
You still have your favorite superheroes. You're just not that, like, diehard.
I know about it. I could hold a conversation, barely, if I needed to.
You're just a Nintendo nerd. Straight up.
Yeah. Because that's what I like. But there's nothing really catered to me. Evidently, Nintendo saw that, at least in the UK.
I do know there's a PokéCrate, but I think it's kind of more of a smaller crate service.
Yeah. I've heard good things about them.
They have some of the cards and stuff, so if you like that stuff, go check it out.
So, Nintendo UK loot crate thing, I hope it comes over here, or at least they ship international. That's super cool. But, if you are in the UK, that might be something that's coming to you. The Pikachu Cup is happening. If you guys glance at Twitter at least once a day following us, you know that I've been tweeting about this. It's super awesome, kind of. It's basically mono electric, but VGC format, so flat doubles. It's a weird team to build, I will say that. I've been playing around with it for a couple days now. I think I've got my team set, but...
You always say that.
Well, no. I'm pretty confident this time.
Okay.
Because there's not a lot of options. As per the rules, which I'm going to share with you now. So it is mono-electric. You can't use any legendaries, basically. So no Zapdos, Raikou, Arceus, Electric, Thundurus, Zekrom. Can't use any of those guys. It is flat doubles, so level 50 and bring 6, pick 4. You can use Pokemon from other games. Not that it really benefits you, because there's nothing you can't get in XY Oris that you couldn't get in a previous game, I guess. Unless you're from Japan, and you get all sorts of special Pikachus, like Extreme Speed Pikachu, Surf Pikachu, because it's Japan, whatever. The benefit, and I'm assuming it's why it's called the Pikachu Cup, the benefit of bringing Pikachu is that if Pikachu makes it into the top 3 of the most used Pokemon in the tournament, all qualified participants will receive a special Pikachu. So finally, everyone else's chance to get in on the swag that Japan has had for years. That's nice. If Pikachu finishes 4th through 12th in the usage, everyone will get a Light Ball, which is a special item that Pikachu can hold.
I feel like this is just their way of pimping out Pikachu. Like, use Pikachu.
Oh, it's very pandering.
And you'll get better
prizes. It's very pandering. There's no denying that. Pikachu doesn't make it in the top 12. Everybody gets 1,000 Pokemiles, which is like what the Circle of Legends was. And pretty much every other online competition that Nintendo doesn't care about. They just give away Pokemiles.
Do you even know how many Pokemiles you have?
I actually build them up because I have Pokemon Bank. I have a lot. I never actually cash them out, but standing, I've got about 300,000.
Wow.
Well, I mean, I never use them.
I know.
So, which, I mean, the benefit of using Pokemon Bank is you can also get battle points with them, which you can get items with, which is what I typically do. But I haven't had to do any for a while, so I haven't really messed with it. But, you know, Pokemiles are cool, too, I guess, if you need, like, a heart scale or something. I don't know. It's a lame prize. We've been over this with Circle of Legends and other competitions.
Use Pikachu.
So use Pikachu if you want a special Pikachu in there. Oh, side note, cosplay Pikachu doesn't count, and I'm royally upset about this and blatantly offended because Nintendo, or Pokemon, I guess, decided to just cut the swagger from the Pikachu cup by not allowing cosplay Pikachu.
That would have been pretty cute.
It would have been so good! I am so upset about this. Like, I know I shouldn't be, because it's not that big a deal, but I was planning on using a cosplay Pikachu, and now I can't. It's upsetting, and I hate it.
You hate everything.
And there's really no reason not to include it. It's just a Pikachu that's dressed up differently.
There's no benefit.
There's no downside. There's no benefit. There's no, it just is. It makes it look cooler, but Pokemon said no. No, no. None of that here. Anywho, the registration will start on Thursday, August 13th, so a week from now. And it'll end that Wednesday, or no, that Thursday, yeah. It'll go a full week. So the 20th, I believe, is when it will stop. Competition itself runs the 21st through the 23rd, so Worlds.
Why do they keep doing this to us?
Alright, so here's the thing. I believe it was supposed to be the week before, and then Pokemon just decided, JK, we're gonna do it a week later during Worlds. I don't really understand, I guess, but it is what it is. So there's currently, I guess, three things going on that weekend. There's the World Championships, there's the Boston Open, and then there's the Pikachu Cup. So you have your top level players, your better players, who are probably going to the Open, and then you have us, like me, who was just playing in the Pikachu Cup for something to do.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of Pokemon going on that weekend. It's just hard if you want to really focus on one thing.
Well, I can't currently stream and get on, like, BattleSpot. So, all of my Pikachu Cup playing will be after 6 o'clock, I guess. Because I think that's when all the VGC streaming and stuff like that ends for the days at Worlds, I think.
I don't know, but that sounds correct.
Speaking of, we have the world streaming schedule, so that'll be up on CantoNation.com. I'm going to make Yellow put it on there.
Yep.
Thanks for doing that.
You're welcome.
So that'll be there if you want to check it out and see what's happening when. It's most of the VGC stuff is happening Saturday, and then the finals are on Sunday.
It's the similar schedule to Nationals. Saturday VGC is happening in the morning. Sunday VGC is happening in the afternoon.
I think there's one thing VGC that's happening on Friday.
Yeah, that would be Swiss Round 1.
Yeah, so I mean, I have to work. I'm kind of glad that only one thing's happening on Friday, so I only have to miss one Swiss Round. As opposed to last time for Nationals, where I missed pretty much everything.
You missed Day 2, Top 8, Top 4, yeah.
I got to see the finals for Junior, Senior, Master. Whatever, making that paper. So, World Stream Schedule will be up on CantoNation.com. We'll link you in the description, as per usual. I'm also going to link you to the Pikachu Cup. If you're interested in that, you can go check that out and get the details. It's pretty basic. It's mono electric, flat doubles, no legends.
Sounds standard.
And also use a Pikachu. I have a special Pikachu that I have made, which most people are probably not going to use, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because I'm crazy, and sometimes I get lucky. I'll give you the details later. It'll be a try not to be terrible at some point, I'm sure. So in continuing with the Pokemon official VGC stuff, the regional events have been listed, at least for the first half of 2015, for the 2016 VGC year. Well, Nugget Bridge came out with the list. I have already taken off some days for it in prep. I am looking at going to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, the 10th and 11th, I think it is.
I think so.
In October. So I'll be there. I thoroughly look forward to getting stomped by such great players as James Beck and Ashton Cox and Wolf Glick, and probably a handful of other people that I'm forgetting about who will definitely make an impression on me when I'm there, mainly by kicking my butt.
I'm sure we'll talk more about it when it becomes more set in stone. Currently, we're just dreaming.
It's pretty set in stone. I'm not really? Kidding. Yeah.
Thanks for letting me know.
I should
probably take that time off
work.
You're
just along for the ride.
Exactly.
This crazy weird ride. I told my dad about it because, like, we need a dog sitter, right? So I was like, you just want to meet us up there? Because the convention center, like, allows dogs. I was like, we'll just take our dog. My dad can come from Ohio and, like, meet us halfway and just, like, babysit the dog while I'm getting mollywopped by everybody.
And then when he's not watching the dog, he can hang out by the pool and play some golf.
Yeah, exactly. And he goes, that is the weirdest thing you have ever said. Because he's in that mindset that, like, 12-year-olds play Pokemon and that's it. I'm like, I'm probably playing, like, a bunch of college-age people. I hope.
I was telling him about it, and he's like, seriously, this is the craziest thing I have ever heard of. Like, this is bizarre.
Which I'll share with you the stats that I told Papa Blue in a bit for trying not to be terrible. But I'm sitting relatively pretty at the moment. To the point where I don't think I would completely embarrass myself at the regionals, maybe.
I think it would just be fun to test yourself and to meet a bunch of people.
I'm gonna regret saying that. I know I am.
Yeah. Luck is not always on your side, but we'll see what happens. All right, so...
And then there's also a regional in Florida, because we live at least half a day away from, like, everything.
I think Lancaster's, like, 7-ish hours, and Florida was, like, 8-ish.
Yeah, so there's one in Kissimmee, Florida, probably in the winter. There's one in the fall, too, but I'm pretty sure there's one in, like, January or February that we could go to. And hang out with Mighty Mammoth Swine or something like that. I don't know. But if I actually do okay, like, to the point where I might be able to get enough points to, like, do something with it towards the end of the year, I might go down to Florida and try my luck there as well.
Maybe.
We'll see. So, yeah, those are the two I'm looking at right now.
You already have plans to spend my birthday money. Come on.
Oh, we're not going there. Well, I mean, you could go. I guess you could go there for your birthday. That wasn't really my intention. You just want to go to Harry Potter World.
I don't know that it's even close. Is it close?
I don't know. We're in Florida.
Might as well make a thing of it.
You're like, oh man, another 4 hours. I guess we'll just go home. No, you're going to be like, take me to Harry Potter World.
Yeah, we'll go visit my cousin and we'll go to Harry Potter World. See the land that they're going to build Nintendo Land. Nintendo, what do we end up calling it? Nintendo?
I call it Nintendo Land.
Land?
I'm pretty sure that's what I mean, they'd be crazy not to call it Nintendo Land. They would. So yeah, anyway, if you're doing a regional at either of those regionals, let me know. Maybe we'll do a little nation meetup or something beforehand. You guys haven't seen our faces. I just realized that. You would not know. So we're going to have to do that at some point, so you know who to look for.
Or we'll just wear, like, obnoxiously loud t-shirts.
Yeah, or that. Yeah, so regionals. I'm scared, but also excited. Hooray. And then the last bit of news that I think we're going to touch on in this episode, the Smogon tier list changed. So let me just break that down for you. It wasn't a whole lot. Kecleon moved from Borderline 4 to NU. Gallade moved from BL3 to RU. Poliwrath goes from PU to NU. Sneasel also from BL to RU. Skunktank goes from RU to NU. Shiftry goes from RU to NU. Fletchinder moves from NU to RU. Klefki gets a bump up from Borderline to OU. Pawniard moves from PU to NU. Hitmonchan goes from RU to NU. Magneton goes from BL3 to RU. Same with Typhlosion, BL3 to RU. Torterra, who I love, gets just a slight bump from PU to NU. Gothitelle goes from OU to UU. Aurorus goes from PU to NU. And Uxie, who I also love, goes from NU to RU. I don't necessarily have any strong feelings about these. There's a couple of my faves in here. I'm glad to see that Typhlosion, Sneasel, and Gallade are getting to see a little bit of love going from BL3 to RU. Gothitelle, I guess I'm okay with the OU to UU.
I have a question.
I'm relatively indifferent about that one. What?
Why are there different borderlines, like 3 and 4? Is it because there's borderlines between each of the tiers on some of the more popular ones?
But there are some, yeah.
Okay.
Borderline or between tiers, where they're like, not quite this one, but not quite good enough to be in this one.
I guess I didn't realize there's borderlines between multiple tiers.
There are, yeah. There are some. Klefki is getting more usage, evidently, bumping up into OU. I'm so happy about Torterra. Even though it's not really that big a deal. Because technically PU is NU. It's just the lesser half of NU. Still though, happy to see Torterra getting some usage. And then Uxie getting the bump up into RU. Because I actually use Uxie when I play singles. Pretty pumped about that. If you guys have any strong feelings about the tier changes, there weren't that many. And it was a lot of BL3 to RU, so a lot got bumped up there. The BL3 roster has shrunk a bit. If you have any specific feelings one way or another, let us know in the comments or something, tweet at us, whatever you want. I'm a little indifferent to most things. I like to see that a couple of my faves got usage, and that's pretty cool. So now the moment you're all waiting for, Yellow's game log.
What?
Just kidding. There is no Yellow's game log, because if you listened last week, she finished the game. She is going to go back and rebeat. Is that a word? Rebeat? Beat again the Elite Four.
Rechallenge.
Yeah, rechallenge the Elite Four. That's good. Good job.
Thank you.
She's going to go back through, play the Elite Four, who has been ramping up to kick her butt, and then Alder, because she wants those pack openings so badly.
I'm going to have to do a lot of level grinding, because I heard they're pretty, I don't even know what the word is. They're going to be pretty difficult to beat.
If you're wondering if we're going to be doing pack openings in the meantime, yes. We're actually going to be releasing 2 a week, I think on Tuesday and Thursday, so look for those. We are currently, I think we're releasing a pack opening today, which is Thursday, even though it's not Thursday right now when we're recording. Go check it out on the YouTubes if you're into that kind of thing. And then we'll have next week, Tuesday and Thursday as well. And then the week after that, I think it's also Tuesday, Thursday. Lots of pack openings. And then hopefully Yellow has level grinded enough to take down, was it level 70 Alder has?
I don't know, I haven't looked into that.
I'm pretty sure it's 70.
That's what you told me.
He's pretty beastly.
That's at least 20 levels I have to grind.
Nah, you can do it. Just a Volcarona. Nobody ever uses those.
Oh, gosh.
I'm kidding. Volcarona is terrifying, and you should absolutely be afraid of it.
I know. You were being sarcastic.
Yeah. But we do have a try not to be terrible, which is, I guess, slightly underwhelming, as it should be, as the sarcasm of the name implies.
How are you doing this week?
How am I doing? That's a good question. So, originally, like I said, I was going to be, like, really gung-ho and focus on all the different formats on Battlespot. That did not go very well. So, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to focus on, like, a couple here and there. Maybe 1 week I'll take a break from one and then focus on, like, another that I want to do. I pretty much play triples just for funsies because I don't switch up my doubles team. I just use the doubles team for triples. I take breaks when I want to from doubles with that. I'm still doing the special. I haven't done it in a while, though. But this week, I mainly focused on Battlespot doubles. So here's what we did. Got on, started playing, hit a streak. All right, I'm on a hot streak and doing pretty well. In the U.S., I currently sit at number 139. So not bad. There are definitely people who are a lot better than me. But for the first season, season 11, that I am taking relatively seriously, I feel like I'm doing okay. I haven't had a chance to play as much as I wanted because of the whole job situation and then some other stuff that we will get into in August, I'm sure. But, you know, I'm sitting all right. I'm at plus 13, doing okay. Currently, my rating is 1673, so that's exciting. And this is all the stuff I was telling my dad about, you know, going to regionals. I'm like, I'm this. I've been doing that. And he's like, oh, good Lord.
Your dad is so funny sometimes.
I looked up how many registered U.S. players were on Battlespot, and it's like in the thousands. Which this statistic means absolutely nothing to anybody who understands like the Battlespot meta.
But trying to explain it to your dad.
So I went through and divided my number by the total numbers to give my like top percentage. And I'm currently at the top 1.7% in the U.S., which honestly sounds really impressive if you don't understand Battlespot, like I said. So I told him that, and then he got like really oddly curious about it. I don't know, but he was confused and maybe excited about it.
I think it would be really interesting if like your dad's possibly going with us, so him just seeing that world, because this is the same man that wanted you to play sports.
Yeah. Well, his words to me were, you know, I didn't think anything I ever did would come of it, because my dad owns his own business, right? So he's like, I just started doing this thing one day, and eventually, you know, I started supporting myself off of it. So I'm not sure he understands the whole thing, but you can't necessarily make a career out of Pokemon, you know, unless you're huge, which obviously I'm not. But all of this sounds so impressive to my dad, and I think that's hilarious. I'm definitely, like, more grounded, because I know I'm an okay player, but I don't stretch my abilities too far. Like, I'm not, like, super hyped on myself. But my dad, who adorably doesn't understand anything, thinks it's, like, really impressive, and it's so cute.
I think we had to make him think it was impressive, because he thought you were battling 12-year-olds.
Well, yeah, that's true. He
was like, how much of a challenge could it be? You're beating out a bunch of 12-year-olds.
No, his actual words were, you're not gonna go beat up on a bunch of kids, are you? I was like, no, they're probably, like, college age. He goes, oh, well, that's a little bit better.
Well, he
than
didn't
I
know
guess.
There were different tiers of competitors.
Divisions?
Yeah, divisions is what I was looking
for. I'm not
for.
Playing the juniors. I'd get crushed anyway. Aiden would just come destroy my life. Aiden. What a cool kid. Anyway, try not to be terrible. Battlespot doubles. That's how we ended the week. I think I calced it on Sunday. Yeah, Sunday, because I always ended on Sunday. The team I am currently running, which I have been running for a little while, and I'm pretty comfortable with it. I've got Mega Metagross, Hydreigon, Amoongus, Rotom Wash, Conkeldurr, and Arcanine. Arcanine is so much better than I had ever hoped in doubles. Like, I almost feel like he's better in doubles than he is singles.
I don't know, you tell me.
He's also pretty good in triples, too. But again, the triples, doubles, there's not really a whole lot of difference there. Aside from some moves hitting, like, anywhere on the field. But yeah, that's the team I'm running. I have been running it for a while. I actually started mid-season 10 with a variation of this team, where I had Whimsicott in place of Amoongus. But I made that switch a little while ago. It's been a little while. I might switch up the team. We'll see. The meta hasn't really changed in a while, so I haven't really had to. I know Talonflame's starting to make a little bit of a comeback. I was looking at the usages, but like that top six really hasn't changed a whole lot.
It'll be interesting to see where the metagame is in October.
Oh yeah. I honestly, Worlds is going to change everything. So I'm just kind of riding this gravy train until it completely tuckers out on me. I'm pleased because I'm not really using like the top used Mons. In fact, the only ones that I'm currently using that were actually banned from the Season 11 special were Amoongus and Rotom, I think. Yeah. So I really didn't have to do much there. The special team I run is, I think it's actually Whimsicott and then Milotic. Not as strong a team, but still relatively handy. It lets me deal with taunters and things like that. It's almost necessary because of all the live hard.
As we there. Talked about previously.
I'm not going to rage into that right now, but just know that I still don't like Lipard. It's still there.
Will Blue ever like Lipard?
Still too soon. Yeah, we actually started getting like recapped by, was it Pokemon Crossroads?
Yeah.
And that was one of their questions for that episode. Will Blue ever like Lipard? Find out. No.
I think it's hilarious that we can do this podcast and then have other people talk about our episodes and their descriptions are completely different than the ones we have.
They're so good, though. I want to hire them on to write the little iTunes.
It's probably your subtitle. Least favorite part.
Because it's like 2 a.m. and I'm like, I just want to get this uploaded. What do I want to say about the episode? Lipard wrecks my life. Yellow's game log.
GBA.
GBA. that's pretty much what I write. And then it's game over. I do like trying to come up with clever titles, though. Anyway, that has nothing to do with trying not to be terrible. So that's how we sit right now. We are running Mega Metagross, Hydreigon, Amoongus, Rotom Wash, Conkeldurr, and Arcanine, Snarlcanine, to be specific. We are plus 13 with a rating of 1673, and we're 139 in the U.S. So that's Woo. Pretty exciting. That's your quickie recap if you managed to sit through all of the tangents that conversation took. But right now, we're going to get into, as I like to say, something much more competitive than trying not to be terrible. We have the GBA finals for Season 4, recapped by me and Old Man Tup, and we are going to kick it to that right now. Nation, now comes the time when we talk about the GBA. The final for Season 4 literally just happened a couple days ago, and I know you've seen it, so we're going to talk about it spoilers free. If you haven't seen it yet, you pause this right now and you go watch it on the YouTubes. Do it now. I couldn't do this alone. I didn't want to do it alone. So you know what? I called in some reinforcements. I called in Old Man Tup to help me cover the Season 4 final.
Hey, what's happening, Togepi? It's Old Man Tup coming at you today. Returning to the Kanto cast, and I'm so excited to be back. Thank you.
Can I just say that Tup officially has the privilege and honor of being the first returning guest on the show.
Awesome.
This is the first time it's happening. So, Tup, thank you for coming on, and congratulations, I think.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, originally, I was going to do a little recap of the teams, right? A-Drive and Mogwai. However, I mean, there's not a whole lot that I can tell you guys that you don't already know. They both went 9-1 in their season, 10-1 in the final. They're both amazing players, very handsome, talented gentlemen, if I may also add. So instead, I'm going to remind you of the teams, and then we're just going to get like right into it. Dan, aka A-Drive, is running Terrakion, Slurpuff, Rotom Wash, Nidoqueen, Mew, and Mega Sableye. Mogwai, or Miguel, as we will probably be interchanging names here, ran Victini, Florges, Hippowdon, Hydreigon, Dewblade, and Megalopunny. Tup, on last week's episode, I pretty much already said that I felt like Mogwai might have had the upper hand here. Did you have an opinion one way or another?
Now, going into this, I did the last weekly recap before the final on the GBA channel, and I predicted that Dan would win this match. That was one of those things. I mean, Miguel is hands down the best preparer in the league. That's inarguable, and if you argue against that, you're wrong. So
that's true.
But Dan has just was the underdog all season. He was, I don't even think he made mid-card in preseason predictions, and he dominated all season long. I mean, he only lost once. I mean, the same could be said about Miguel. But I just felt that the way Dan had been playing, especially after his showing against John, he had a little bit more in his favor going into the final.
Okay. And you know what? Yellow actually agreed with you. The CantoCast household was split. And I was kind of siding with the Real Morel. She was kind of siding with the Rampardos. But, you know, it is what it is. So that's so you thought Dan had the upper hand. That's interesting. Which, it did kind of seem like that initially, I feel like. Dan was kind of up against a wall for most of the match, but I didn't agree with that.
I felt by the way I know both of the gentlemen and the way they conducted themselves in their videos, I saw much more panic on the side of Mega Mogwai throughout the match than I did with Dan.
Exactly, yeah.
And that was one of the points I have written down when I went over the battles, when I knew I was going to be analyzing it, was that if you watch almost every single turn, Dan takes longer to make a decision. Not because he didn't know what to do, because he had a cool head, mm-hmm. he took his time, he ran the damage calcs, and he knew exactly what he could and couldn't take.
Yeah, that's it. I couldn't have said it better myself, and I'm glad I didn't try, because that is exactly how I feel. And for the record, I feel like Dan, a.k.a. A-Drive, which I'm probably going to say for most of the night, because I love the way he says that, and I hear it in my head every time I say it. Most of the season, I don't think I ever saw him sweat, really. He was on balance most of the time, and, you know, like you said, always cool-headed, always taking his time, running the options, doing the calcs. Which, I feel like A-Drive may have taken a little bit of flack about the calcing, but everybody does it.
Oh, right.
Honestly, it's
a bag of tools at your disposal. It is your choice whether or not you open that bag and take every possible advantage you have. And while it slows down the match and slows down a live video, you're idiotic not to take advantage of the fact that there's a damage calc available to you if you're questioning what it needs to be. I mean, especially at that caliber of a match, I'd have calced every move just like he did.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't want to miscalc or make a play just because an assumption is wrong and then boff it, you know, in the final. Let alone right. Any time in the regular season either. But definitely during the finals, you know. That's the time to use, like you said, everything you've got in your bag of tricks. And honestly, the match, while level heads were necessarily split on this one, I feel like a lot of the match was back and forth. It was shot and shot. I think by the 30-minute mark, it was like 4-4 or 3-4 or something still. I mean, that's just insane. It was relatively hacksless, kind of. I feel like A-Drive may have taken a few more crits than Miguel did.
Actually, he took 3 more crits than Miguel did. I did write that down.
I felt like he did. Yeah.
I think you crit something with a psychic that it would have went down to, or I don't remember. It might have been Nidoqueen, Sludge Wave, and Florges, I think, was a crit.
Yeah, that was one.
The only crit that I saw that might have changed anything was when Hydreigon crit Terrakion with the Dark Pulse. And when I guess there's two, and both of them were from Hydreigon. Early in the match, Hydreigon crit Rotom Wash with a Dark Pulse, which took it, I believe, below half health. And that prevented Dan from being able to take a more powerful move if he was carrying the Draco Meteor, which changed maybe a little bit here and there. But it stopped him from getting up a screen immediately also. The Dark Pulse on Terrakion really wasn't that big of a deal because, I mean, the only other hit he took was at the very end of the match from a +4 Shadow Sneak. And the other crits that were, again, just roosted off with damage or soft-boiled were the two Megalophony hits on Mew.
Yeah.
But like I said, neither swayed the direction of the match terribly from the course it was already on.
Yeah. So, into the match, like I said, about half an hour in, still pretty much shot for shot, still rocking around 4-4, or I think 4-3 maybe in Dan's favor at that point. There was a point a couple minutes later where I feel like the mind game started a little bit. There was a lot of switching between Hydreigon and then Slurpuff and then into Terrakion and then back into Nidoqueen and then into Dual Blade, and I'm just like, whoa, what is happening right now? These guys are literally calling what the other one's going to switch into. It's game theory at its finest, basically. That alone was pretty impressive to watch. It kind of reminded me of the dance of, what was it, Hippowdon and Crobat when Miguel played Hank with the roosting and the earthquake and the rock slides. Absolutely insane. But I feel like that was kind of the pivot point in the match where somebody was going to take an upper hand. And I believe that is where we started to kind of dwindle into Miguel's team getting worn down, where he would eventually only be left with Dewblade.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after that, all right, and you guys watched this. I know you watched it, because how could you not? I feel like Miguel really had to go for Swords Dance no matter what. He actually made a point relatively near the end of the match that Dan didn't know about Swords Dance, and it all coming down to Mew's last move, which he thought was going to be Will-O-Wisp. For whatever reason, Miguel was convinced that Dan's Mew was carrying Will-O-Wisp. It was actually carrying Taunt, and Miguel had to go for the Swords Dance. It was the only way, because he had to get Shadow Sneak up to a point where it could one-shot the rest of the remaining teams, because it wouldn't have survived one way or another. So Miguel thinks Mew has Will-O-Wisp. Dan doesn't know that Dewblade has Swords Dance, which there was some back and forth between me and a friend of mine about the commonality, perhaps, of the Swords Dance set on Dewblade. Which I suppose is true. It is a fairly common set. It's probably the better way to run Dewblade, I would say. But A-Drive started kicking himself because he didn't taunt. And he had the opportunity to. And I believe he went for a soft boil instead.
Yeah.
It, personally, just a sidestep away from the action at the moment, I feel like Dan was being a little hard on himself. Because although that prediction of the Swords Dance with the taunt would have probably won Dan the match, I feel like there's no way he would have really known for sure.
I don't know. If I was to point to one thing that lost Dan the match, that is it.
Oh, and absolutely.
Do I think he's too hard on himself because of it? Yes, but at the same time, he lost a GBA final because he soft-boiled, played too safe, and didn't... I think if he'd have taken 5 more seconds to think, he would have taunted without a doubt. Because I was literally screaming at my computer screen, don't heal up, taunt. He's either going to sub or he's going to Swords Dance. And Mew was in and was not going to break a sub with 5 psychics. Mm-hmm. It was doing pitiful damage. That was its only attack. And it couldn't toxic. And I was just screaming click taunt, because that was the only thing that Miguel could have done, barring crits, that would have saved him the match at that point. I think every one of Dan's Pokemon outsped what was left of Dewblade. And I was so frustrated. And as soon as Dan saw the Swords Dance, he realized it. And is he too hard on himself? Yes. But, I mean, he lost the biggest match of the season at that one pivotal moment. I can easily say he is justified being hard on himself, even though he shouldn't.
Yeah. So, Tup, I've actually got a question for you, mm-hmm. because I have a sneaking suspicion that you have analyzed this a bit more than I have. So, I'm wondering, Miguel made the point that a +2 Shadow Sneak from Dewblade wouldn't have taken Mew out at that range, so he had to go for Shadow Claw.
Mm-hmm.
Had Dan instead taunted after the first Swords Dance, is there a way he could have brought it back against a +2 Dewblade instead of a +4?
It's possible. I mean, it might have allowed Terrakion, I don't know what the counts were because I didn't look into it, but a +2 Shadow Sneak from a Dewblade may not have finished off Terrakion at the level it was. I mean, it obviously would have taken out the Nidoqueen.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Mew was the only thing he had to body it with. But, I mean, at that point, a +2 Shadow Sneak, he may have been able to outlast between soft-boiled psychicking, getting the possible special defense drop from the psychics. And, I mean, it would have literally been a stall war in who gets the luck first at that point. But, yeah, that's after the first Swords Dance. I think Dan just hit the panic button and...
Yeah,
it was over.
That was definitely, because I noticed, like, in between the hype of the match, I noticed that Dan immediately went for Psychic, gave mm-hmm. zero thoughts about it, and immediately went for Psychic. And I'm like, that seems out of character for Dan, aka A-Drive, because he usually, you know, before he clicks, he takes a moment and pauses and really, you know, like I said, weighs out the option. But he gave zero thought about it and just immediately went for Psychic. So I was wondering, like, if that would have done a difference, which, you know, we may not know unless someone who knows the spreads listens to this and decides to message me or something. But I also thought it was interesting that I don't believe Terrakion was carrying Earthquake, was it?
It was not.
It wasn't, yeah.
It had the Stealth Rocks.
Yeah, okay.
Which I thought was an interesting play on his part.
It was, yeah. I thought so, too. And it was, he got those up, what, mid-game?
It was fairly late mid-game.
Yeah.
So I think it was Terrakion's first appearance that set up the rocks. And then he immediately switched out, preserving the fact that it could still be choice scarfed.
Okay, yeah, he was bluffing the scarf.
Yeah. In my opinion, both competitors really had out-of-character moments.
Mm-hmm.
Miguel, in my opinion, the entire first half of the match played way out of character. He was I don't want to say overly aggressive, but I don't think he thought as much as he normally does. And I think that he just kind of, I don't want to say went willy-nilly in the beginning, but I mean, I just don't think he never grabbed the momentum, and I think that toyed with him a little bit early. Because almost every single first half of gameplay was just tit for tat. Something happens, well then something else happens, nobody gets anywhere. But I think where Miguel started playing his game was when he revealed that Hydreigon was not choiced in any way and went for the taunt on the Rotom, which prevented the dual screens, which Dan was trying to set up at that point.
Yeah.
And that is where I think Miguel started picking his game back up, and it was just kind of back and forth after that.
Yeah, that was definitely a solid prediction on his part. And I remember, like, how did he know he was going to do that? But it worked.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. But yeah, wow. I definitely agree. I don't know if Miguel just calcs, like, really quick, or if it's just not as noticeable as Dan, because I think he kind of turns to the side when he checks him. But I don't feel like Miguel checked that many calcs until, like, late game.
He didn't. And Miguel is one of the kind of people, and I've only known two people like this in my entire lifetime. My first person I knew, his name was Rich. But they were the type of people who knew what kind of damage each Mon did to what. They just savant-like know exactly what is going to happen, and until they get a little bit of panic, they never have to check anything, because they are perfectly comfortable knowing what does what. But I mean, if you watch through that match, Miguel was staring at the screen, not doing anything, and as fast as I can snap my fingers after damage is done, knows exactly what item the opponent has and what move set and spread they have. It's just uncanny.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend like that. Kevin, if you're listening, I hate you because of that, but you're also awesome for the same reason. Yeah, savant is an excellent word to use for that. Because I know, like, he was making the plays, but he wasn't calcing. And I was like, what is happening right now? Is he psychic? I don't know, maybe. But ultimately, once Dual Blade got, you know, the two swords dance up, it was pretty much an end game at that point. Crits wouldn't have mattered. Everybody was worn down to a point where the Shadow Sneak, you know, nothing was going to stand up to it. So, after that, Dan got a little salty. Miguel got a little naked. It was an interesting end. I don't blame Dan for being salty. I really don't. That, like I said, I feel like he was a little hard on himself.
He was justifiably salty. He was more salty at the way he played as opposed to something uncontrollable happening.
Well, yeah, because, you know, if you go down to a crit or a random parahax or something like that,
right,
it is what it is. But, you know, if he literally had the opportunity to stop the sweep before it happened, whether or not he expected himself to be able to predict that, that's one thing. But the salt is understandable. Dan, we still love you, just so you know.
All right. I'm rooting for him in the UCL for sure.
Yeah. Oh, don't even get me started, Tub. I don't even know. I don't even know where to go there. I just don't. There's too many options. Nips is doing pretty well. Not to derail, but he's doing pretty well over there right now. So, Miguel won. He is your GBA Season 4 champion. We got to see a whole lot of Miguel in that last video. But, you know, he was excited. Don't blame him. I'd have gone running around the street too, more than likely. But that, as an excited end, comes to a close. That is how GBA Season 4 wraps. So if you guys haven't seen the video, I don't know why you're even listening to this right now. You should go watch it, because this analysis does the battle justice. You need to go watch it. And then watch both sides, because it is very interesting. One guy is thinking one way. The other guy isn't even on that radar, and he's thinking a completely different route. So, I mean, it's definitely a good opportunity to get inside the head of players and how they think and what their process is. So definitely go and watch those and learn a lesson. So I feel like we wouldn't be doing Season 4 justice unless we mentioned the awards for Season 4. So if you guys didn't know, there are awards that happened this year, which I believe is a first, right, Tup?
Yes, that is correct. This was the first year, well, at least, I know this is the first year for most of the awards.
We're going to go through them all, don't you worry. I'm going to get you filled in. So we had 7th Pokemon of the Year, which is kind of like secondary MVP almost, is kind of how I looked at it.
More or less, it's the Pokemon that doesn't come all the time. It's not a staple of the team, but when it shows up, the 3, 4, 5 times it comes, it makes such a huge impact that you remember.
There's that. There is the offensive Pokemon of the Year. There's the defensive Pokemon of the Year, which I know Tup has very strong feelings about. So we
talk to you about that.
We will definitely get into that. Coach of the Year, and then MVP, aka Most Valuable Pokemon for the season. So we're going to start at the top and kind of work our way down to arguably the more important ones, I think. So 7th Pokemon of the Year. The nominees were Sigilyph, Aggron, Umbreon, Ambipom, and Howlucha. So the win actually went to Ambipom from the Mankeys, I believe it was.
Yes. Yeah. Shady Penguin and the New York Mankeys have Ambipom, and he used it very effectively against me twice.
Is it too soon to talk about it?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I love Ambipom. I was so happy to see it get 6th Poke of the Year. It actually had my vote, or 7th Poke of the Year.
You know what? Of the list, I have to say that one, maybe Umbreon or Howlucha, but I feel like Ambipom has the potential to do a lot more than those guys necessarily. So rightfully so, I think that was deserved and appropriate for the Mankeys to get that. So offensive Pokemon of the Year, which this, I believe, is just the absolute monster powerhouse that it is, right? Offensive Pokemon of the Year nominees were Weavile, Mega Pinsir, Mega Gardevoir, Mega Lopunny, and Krokodile. And the winner was Weavile, which I believe was Cincinnati?
Yes, Malvode and the Loudreds had Weavile. But this was not a shocker to anyone. This had the out-and-out most kills all season long. In the recaps, had the highest MVP voting, but was ranked highest kill-death ratio all season long, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, it just came out like a cannon, and it just kept racking up kills, except for the, I think, 1 week it wasn't brought. But, I mean, this was a really good list of Pokemon. It had, between Weavile, Mega Pinsir, and Mega Gardevoir, the top 3 kill-death ratio Pokemon, numbers-wise. So, I mean, this was just a fantastic list.
And I will give a shout-out to Hank and the Aqua Jets, because he made mention that, you know, with the finals, or the playoffs, rather, included that Mega Pinsir did slightly more work than Weavile, so I will give an honorable mention to that. However, I don't believe that the playoffs were included. So, rightfully so, I feel like I had to go to Weavile.
Right.
As much as I would have liked to see Pinsir win it, can't. I'm sorry, Hank. We're still friends. I'm sorry. So, Weavile. I don't think Tup and I are divided on that one either. It's, you know, almost an obvious pick. Next on the list, we had Defensive Pokemon of the Year. So, this was the sturdy Ironsides, reliable Mon, who you just hated to see because you knew it was going to wall the living daylights out of you. So the nominees for that were Milotic, Chansey, Mega Sableye, two guys from Dance Team, Hippowdon, and then Umbreon. Milotic ended up taking the win for, I believe, if nothing else, maybe style points with that mirror coat that everybody seems to be talking about still. So the Mankeys, you know, took home another one. What are your feelings on that one?
I was very bitter, and still am, that Hitmontop didn't at least make the ballot list, and I have expressed that on more than one occasion to the writers who came up with this list. But that set aside, I feel if Milotic didn't get it, I personally voted for Hippowdon because I feel that I just think it had a little bit better season overall. But I mean, Milotic is more than deserving. It is a monster. As said before, I played it twice, and I don't think I took it out either time. It's just fantastic in this setup, in this format.
And I will say that the last time that you were on Top, you made a point in saying that you would defend Hitmontop as a defensive Mon till the day he died. And
I feel it had a really fantastic defensive year this year, and it didn't make it to the list, and I think some other Pokemon did that shouldn't have, but that's just my opinion. And kudos to the writers, because I think they did a fantastic job otherwise.
True. That's true. Yeah. I mean, if not melodic, I might say Mega Sableye. And that over Chansey, just because with Chansey, you kind of know what you're going to get, right. You know? Mega Sableye with that Sucker Punch was crazy.
Yeah.
Still, style points for that. No hard feelings. GG. So, you know, if not melodic, I'd have probably given it to Mega Sableye. But melodic still, you know, given its two abilities, it's pretty useful, whichever one it's got. That's not to say Mega Sableye isn't, but it's a little more versatile, I think. So, definitely deserve it there. The Mankeys are just racking it up, man. Yeah. Good lord. So, Coach of the Year. And I think Tup has some strong feelings about this one, too. Maybe. Coach of the Year, your nominees were just three this time. Just three. Mulvone, A-Drive, and Mogwai. Not really incredibly surprised by the nominees.
Three fantastic candidates, all who are deserving to be on this list.
Absolutely. And to keep you from being too suspenseful, Mogwai did win. He did take home the win for Coach of the Year. So he's not only your champion, he's also the Coach of the Year.
Indeed.
Not a bad year for Mogwai, I must say. I really like Dan, though, because as you pointed out earlier, he wasn't necessarily considered a huge threat initially. And, you know, I feel like he almost came up and kind of, you know, proved himself. Miguel did really well in the D-League, which you have mentioned.
All right, he went undefeated.
Yeah, you've mentioned that before, I'm sure. And, you know, I feel like everybody kind of saw him as an initial favorite. Obviously, he got, like, first seed, I think. So, I don't know. I always like rooting for the underdog, though. That's just me. But
It all depends on what the criteria that went into who voting took into consideration. Is it who's your favorite guy who everybody thinks is the best, or who, based off of before the season, had the best overall season? And in my opinion, and I'm not taking anything against from Mogwai, he won the championship and he is fantastic. He probably is the best coach in the GBA, and he proved it because he won the finals.
True.
But if we are going for Coach of the Year and who I think performed the best compared to what everyone thought they would do at the beginning of the season, I would honestly put Mulvone in the front of this, because when Mulvone drafted, everyone's like, he has a one-trick pony team who isn't going to do crap, and he was put at the bottom of everybody's list. GBA or not, he was put at the bottom. He was below me when we started.
Wow. I didn't know he got ranked so low.
Oh, yeah. Well, everyone said, oh, it's Mulvone. He's going to get the Shady Syndrome from season 2 and 3. He's a big YouTuber. He's not going to have time to prepare. He didn't draft very well. All of his mons only do one thing. And look at the season he had. I mean, coming fresh into this format with no experience whatsoever. Both Dan and Miguel did have that. And, I mean, he drafted the league MVP, and he made it the league MVP. If you'd have said at the beginning of the season Weavile was going to be the MVP based off of Mulvone's team alone, we would have laughed in your face. But, I don't know. Again, all three of these guys are very deserving, and this is just my personal feelings on it and how I gauge how it should have been done. All three of these guys, in my opinion, deserve an award because they were the three by far best coaches.
Yeah, and, you know, the debate that's taking place currently only goes to show how qualified each of these guys would be for this spot.
Oh, exactly.
End of story, you know. But, you know, again, Miguel, not a bad choice. Nobody's a bad choice, obviously. But he took the win. So, you know what? Good for him. We love you. And then the last one, most valuable Pokemon, the MVP. This one was interesting to me. The nominees were, feel like I'm like hosting the Golden Globes or something. And the nominees were Weavile, Mega Pinsir, Mega Sableye, Mega Gardevoir, and Goodra. So almost identical to the Offensive Pokemon of the Year nominees, sharing, what was it, three in common. Weavile, Mega Pinsir, and Mega Gardevoir. Mega Sableye won. Interesting. I thought that was interesting. It's pretty versatile, and I don't necessarily know what the thought process or qualifying factors went into picking MVP. But I will say that I am glad to see that Dan got some love on this one.
Yeah, this was definitely one of the scariest Pokemon to go up against all season long, and it took the most to prepare for. So,
did you have all too much experience with going up against Sableye, don't you?
Yeah. But, I mean, it was on a list with a bunch of really good Pokemon. I mean, it went up against the offensive MVP and the other two highest kill ratios in the league. And then there was Gudra, who was just a beast all season for Geo, and it pulled out the win. So, I mean, it was well-deserved because it was just such a threat in this format, being part of that indomitable core of A-Drive.
Which, you know, Mega Pinsir got nominated again. I'm super biased about that. but, you know what, Hank? You raked up all of the nominees, I will say. And you know what? Weavile can't win everything. So it's good to see that Mega Sableye took the win for MVP there. You're absolutely right. It's good utility. I imagine that it would take a lot to prepare for that thing. So good for Dan and good for Sableye. Those are your Season 4 awards. We got Ambipom, Weavile, Melodic, Mogwai, and Mega Sableye as the standout nominees there. So good for them. Fantastic season for pretty much everybody, I think. I don't believe there was a match where I was just like, this is really boring, and I don't know what these guys are doing with their lives. I never once had that impression. So with that, I want to thank Tup for coming on and providing excellent commentary and play-by-play and in-depth analysis that I could not have done solo. And I also want to take a beat to plug Tup's channel because he's got a lot of stuff going on over on his YouTube. And I'll link you to that in the description below as well.
If you want to come over, give the channel a like. Be more than happy to have you guys in the Bucktooth Bucko Nation. But other than that, thank you for having me, a proud member of the Kanto Nation. And I look forward to the podcast.
With that, we're going to kick it back to the rest of this week's episode where I have a team analysis for you guys. So enjoy. So Nation, this week I had intended to bring you a team review from its Bush League. However, last minute, I decided, you know what? I'm not 100% happy with what I've done here. I don't want to push something out that I'm not 100% satisfied with. And I had a really cool idea of something to kind of do with what was submitted to me. So, I pulled it. It's Bush League. I apologize. I'm going to get you next week. But I think you'll be happier with what I've come up with. And you guys as a whole, it'll just be cooler what I've done with the team. So, we're going to wait on that. We're going to put the pause button on. But this week, since it was in the folder to get to at some point anyway, and I could come up with it relatively quickly, we had a team submission from Chase Branham. You guys know who that is, for sure. It's C-Brand Games on Twitter. He's been around a while. Super cool dude. While we were on vacation, or traveling, whichever you want to call it, I helped Chase kind of build a team-ish. I didn't have a huge part in it, I kind of just gave some insight. But I'm familiar with the team, so that means that I can kind of give insight on it without putting in a whole lot of thought, just because I spent, I think, 2 days talking to Chase about it. So we're going to do that one this week. And again, it's Bush League. I will hit you up next week. Do not worry. It's coming. So what we have here is a Battlespot Doubles team running Mega Charizard Y, Venusaur, Conkeldurr, Swampert, Excadrill, and Raichu. So the way we went about it was Chase was kind of getting new into competitive battling, I think, and he didn't really know where to start or what to use or what would be good in the VGC format. So I did what I like to do when I'm starting off kind of fresh with an idea. I like to use Pokemon that I like using in run-throughs of the actual game, or just mons that I like the designs of, or just something about them that I like. Because again, I think any Pokemon can be competitive with reasonable limitation, but I think anything can kind of work if you build around it appropriately. So that's the approach that we took here, and I believe it was all kind of based around Charizard and Excadrill. Mega Charizard Y, obviously you want to go Sun Team. That's just how you do it. If you don't use Y, you probably go X, and then you use some kind of redirect support, so you can Dragon Dance, and then just fire off things, or Flame Charge, or something like that. Some sort of setup, rather than a theme team with Sun. We're using Charizard Y. He's gonna set up the Drought. Chase is running a Timid Nature, full-on special attack, full-on speed, so it's a heavy hitter. He's got Charizard running Heat Wave, Solar Beam, Air Slash, and Protect. And I'm pretty familiar with this set because I think I kind of helped guide him towards it. One thing that you can swap out if you want, that's actually becoming more popular, actually, with the current meta, Heat Wave for Flamethrower. So obviously, with Heat Wave, the damage is going to be a little bit less because it's spread. However, you're going to hit 2 for 1. Flamethrower in the sun with a Charizard like this, Not a whole lot's going to be able to stand up to it that well. Of course, Flamethrower more accurate. Heatwave has a chance to miss, which it has on occasion. So, you know, that's always a thing to watch out for. Solar Beam is always really useful because you're going to have Sun while Charizard is there. Air Slash, pretty essential for most things. And, you know, if you get a Paralysis off, you can kind of do a Paraflinch strategy as well. So, that's pretty cool. And then Protect for the last move, obviously. Protect, essential. Definitely want to use that when you're Mega Evolving to wait a turn to get the speed up. First turn is always based off of Charizard, regular Charizard speed, so... The next Mon on the team is Venusaur, Modest Nature, and he's running Black Sludge. Full special attack investment, full speed investment. So one of the things that I tend to look for with Black Sludge, because it's like leftovers, right, for poison Pokemon. Black Sludge is really good if you are bulky and tend to have HP investment, something that's going to last. Now with this set... which is Sleep Powder, Giga Drain, Sludge Bomb, and Protect. I don't know that Black Sludge is ultimately the right choice for that, just because I don't think you'll get the full benefit out of it. Especially in the Sun, a Fire Attack is probably going to do Venusaur in relatively quickly, so you kind of have to play around that. But Black Sludge isn't the worst option out there. Maybe something like Expert Belt could come in handy. Citrus Berry maybe might be useful. Life Orb could be a thing if you wanted to switch up the item on Swampert. Spoilers. Swampert's holding a Life Orb. But Black Sludge, you know, it's there. It's an option. It's always available. No need to switch it up if you don't want to. So Sleep Powder for obvious support. That's pretty handy. Giga Drain, Sludge Bomb, and Protect. Giga Drain and Sludge Bomb being the two main uses there. And then Protect, obviously, is useful. I like specifically Protect on both Charizard and Venusaur just because you can double Protect turn 1 if you need to. Because Fake Out is going to be a thing when someone knows you're running a Sun team. Because the initial Protect with Charizard is almost obvious. So usually if someone's got Fake Out on an opponent's team when they're going up against this team, they're probably going to fake out the other user because they're expecting Charizard to protect, and then they'll double in. So, you know, always nice to get the double protect up. Allows you to avoid things that you don't want to deal with. Turn 1. Conkeldurr is number 3, and I feel like I had a part in getting Conk on this team because I'm always a huge proponent of Conk. I love Conk. He's always super clutch for me. This one is Adamant with Assault Vest. I'm assuming it's Guts, just because Guts is super useful in the meta. However, you could run Iron Fist if you wanted. We've got some punch moves on here. So this one particularly is going to be 252 attack, 248 HP, and then 8 in special defense. So it's not the spread that I typically run. I usually run a bulkier variant with a little less in attack and more focused on defense and special defense along with the HP bulk, which is a little bit less than what he's got here. You know, play around with it, see what you think. There's not really a bad way to run Conk. Conk is one of those mons that you can use in singles and doubles. He can run interesting sets because he's got elemental punches. Also has a way to regenerate health with things like Drain Punch. He loves the Assault Vest. It's just a good Pokemon in general. So this one specifically is running Mach Punch, Drain Punch, Ice Punch, and Stone Edge. So some things that you could swap in if you wanted. Rock Slide in place of Stone Edge. Poison Jab in place of Ice Punch or Stone Edge. Mach Punch and Drain Punch I always say keep, no matter what, just because it's stab, it's priority, it's health regeneration. It's good to have those two on you. I always try and run priority when I can, just because I tend to go more bulky and slightly less offensive, so a last-minute priority move can usually pick up the KO if I need it to. So that's why I would definitely keep Mach Punch and Drain Punch on here. In lieu of the other two moves, go full-on Assault, you know? Poison Jab, Rock Slide, Stone Edge, Ice Punch, Thunder Punch might even be a thing if you want to deal with bulky water types. Conk is a great mon, lots of stuff you can do with it. Excellent addition to this team, in my opinion. Next up we have Swampert. Adamant running Life Orb. This one's going to be bulky. It's got 252 in HP, 252 in attack. This is one that I think I kind of lobbied for as well, maybe. Just because Wide Guard is so good and so underused. And it fit with the defensive core in this team. So you want something that's going to resist ice. You want something that's going to be able to tank electric attacks. And ultimately, with Venusaur and Charizard on the team, you don't have to worry about grass attacks too much because you've got a switch in almost all the time. So, Swampert fits really well on this team. He gets Wide Guard, which is excellent. This one's running Waterfall, Earthquake, Rock Slide, and Wide Guard. Rock Slide, I love on Swampert. Waterfall is an excellent move. Don't get rid of Waterfall. The flinch potential is great. The stab water offensive is great. And it coincides really well with another mon that we'll get to in just a little bit. Because I mentioned that paraflinching possibility, and there's a good mon for that coming up in a little bit. So, next up is Excadrill. Excadrill, Jolly, Choice Scarf, pre-standard Excadrill, max speed, max attack. Running Iron Head, Earthquake, Shadow Claw, and Protect. I don't know that I would run Protect on a Scarfer. You could bluff it and then switch out if you wanted. I don't know. That's pretty risky in flat doubles, which is what VGC is. So you've only got four mons. You don't want to be forced to switch out because of a Scarf Protect. Although Alex Agloza has done it on one of his mons, and I think there was a video not too long ago about it. And it worked out really well, and it was awesome. So, you know, I might just not know what I'm talking about with this. Protect I might replace with Rock Slide, maybe, just for coverage against things like Charizard, things like Thundurus, things that might wall your Excadrill. Otherwise, Shadow Claw is actually a good option to have on here, just because you don't really have a whole lot that deals super effective damage to psychic types. So Cresselia might give you a little bit of an issue. X-Scissor, I think, is another one that he learns that could be useful for that. And something to deal with psychic type is definitely something that you want running a Chlorophyll Venusaur who would otherwise get bopped pretty quickly by an uber-offensive psychic type mon. So something to watch out for. Love that Shadow Claw is on there. It's not super common, and I like it because of that, but it fits really well with the Scarf set. Earthquake, another one you're going to want to watch out for. Friendly Fire is on. You don't want to go knocking out your own mons. And then Iron Head, excellent way to deal with fairy types. Excellent way to flinch. Again, the paraflinching is just outstanding in this team. And then the last one is Raichu, which I have been alluding to this entire time with the whole paraflinch thing. So this is a kind of mixed Raichu between offensive and then a little bit of support. So this Raichu, specifically, is modest with an air balloon. It has 252 EVs in special attack, 252 in speed, and then 4 in HP. Thunderbolt, Encore, Fake Out, and Nuzzle are the moves of choice. So it's super offensive, right? But with moves like Encore, Fake Out, you get some needed support. Excellent way to trap somebody into Protect. Love that. I actually went up against one of these not too long ago when I was talking to Chase about this team, and I loved it. And I started kind of testing it on Showdown a little bit, and it worked out really well. So I suggested it for this team just because it tended to fit really well. You don't have a whole lot to deal with bulky water types, like I mentioned earlier. So Raichu is an excellent addition, naturally. Thunderbolt is obviously the main offensive move. Encore to trap somebody into a move, usually support-oriented. Fake Out, obviously for leads, super handy. And then Nuzzle. Nuzzle is amazing. Seijun Park ran a Pachirisu that did Nuzzle in 2014 Worlds, I believe. So what Nuzzle's going to do is hit, but it's going to paralyze everything it hits. Now, this isn't a concern when you're running Raichu with Excadrill or Swampert, because electric moves don't work. Swampert and Excadrill also have the ability to flinch with Iron Head and Waterfall, also Rock Slide. So it's amazing. It's perfect, and it fits really well. It's a pretty good hybrid team between Sun. Obviously, Venusaur and Charizard, everyone's going to be expecting the Sun there. Conkeldurr gives you a little bit of bulk with some priority. You're definitely going to want to watch out for moves like Solar Beam in the Sun against your Swampert. But again, I feel like you have some pretty decent switch-ins for moves like that. Same with Fire-type moves against Venusaur. Again, that's why Swampert is there. And Charizard, too, for that matter. Not that he would take a Flamethrower relatively well in the Sun, but still, it's an option. The team is really well-balanced. You get an option of kind of mixing up the movesets if you want. But the way it's laid out, I might go in and make the EV spreads a little more tailored to what the current threats in the game are. But as it sits, pretty simple sets. Not a whole lot of trickiness involved in pulling things off. But when you have the setup potential, you do have a lot of options to work with. And there's lots of lead potentials in this. You can lead Charizard and Venusaur if you want. Swampert and Raichu, or Raichu and Excadrill are excellent leads. Same thing with Raichu and Charizard. It's just a lot you can do with it. There's a lot you can do with this team. So it's an awesome team. So if you guys want, you know, play around with the team. It's a good one. Chase, I hope it's serving you well. I haven't touched base with you on in a little while. I know we were going to practice a little bit because I was doing some team testing for some additional teams that I'm running in VGC. But if you want, hit me up. We'll make that happen. I'm almost through all of the crazy submissions that you guys sent me not too long ago. I think I'm going to be wrapping those up in the next 2 weeks. So if you want to get your team featured on KantoCast and you want me to take a look at it, share my thoughts about it, you can send that by using the appropriate form on cantonation.com. It's an excellent form. Y'all came up with it. Give it a look-see. And you might be able to have your team featured on KantoCast. Either way, even if it's not, I will always take a look at it and send feedback through email that is also provided in the form. So if that's interesting to you, hit it up and we will take a look. So as we come to the end of episode 20...
We're no longer a teenager.
We're not. We're... can't drink yet, though.
No. That's maybe next week.
Must you always say everything I say?
I'm sorry.
Anyway, we always like to talk about a citizen of the nation, which is what we're going to do right now. I just literally mentioned his name, I think, in the last segment, which was the team review. I didn't get his team this week. However, it's Bush League. You are actually our citizen of the week.
He sent us a nice email.
He did. He sent us an email, super hyped about the t-shirt fundraiser. He's a pretty active member within the community. He's always favoriting and retweeting stuff. So we appreciate that. I don't think I've said appreciate in a very long time.
You used to overuse it.
I'm going to say it again. It's Bush League. We appreciate you. Your Twitter link will be in the description as per usual. Guys, go give him a follow.
Whatever it is you do.
High internet high fives, if those are a thing, make it happen. So, congratulations to It's Bush League. Thank you for being a member of the Kanto Nation. We appreciate you. One more time. Appreciation galore. So, that said, I guess we're kind of at the wrap-up. So, we have a straw poll up right now. I think it just launched on...
Wednesday?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going on Wednesday.
I'll be reposting it probably for a few days. But the purpose of the straw poll is so that we can find out, one, approximately how many people are going to be wanting a t-shirt, two, about how much you'd pay for a t-shirt, and that will help us set goals for the campaign and figure out quality and what kind of design we can do for the t-shirts.
Yeah, I really don't know a whole lot about it. I had Yellow look into it, which she did amazingly. Good job. And ultimately, the t-shirt fundraiser, like, I wanted to do for a capture card to, like, start doing some more video content that's more competitive-based. But ultimately, just to kind of refresh and enhance the experience that we are creating here on KantoCast. And so every, like I said before, everything fundraiser-wise or donation-wise, it's all going to get put right back into the podcast.
For equipment or services, that kind of stuff.
Or not even the podcast, just the Kanto Nation in general to make the content better. Something, anything.
If we're thinking like a certain goal in mind and that goal is just not attainable, then we need to know so we can adjust and make it good for everyone.
And here's the thing. I don't want to rob you guys because that's ridiculous. I personally probably wouldn't pay more than $20 for a t-shirt. So that's how the straw poll is actually set up into price brackets. Whatever you want to put down as an answer is fine. No judgment. I personally am super cheap. So if I vote, I'm probably voting for like the $15 to $20. If there is that even the range? I think it's $15 to $20.
Yeah, $15 to
$20. I would vote for that one, just so you know. So don't feel bad if you're like, I can't pay $30 for a t-shirt. I wouldn't either. I don't blame you, because that's crazy. But that was one of the options in terms of like quality and print.
Yeah, just keep in mind that the more cheaper the t-shirt, you're probably not going to get like the softest or the most colorful t-shirt. Is all I'm saying.
Yeah, so it's like, do you guys want quality with a higher price? Do you just want some Kanto Nation swag for cheap? Whatever it is, doesn't matter to us. I just want to get something to you guys that you're going to like and that you want
So you can represent the nation.
So we can, because we're going to start repping. Because as I've mentioned, I'm going to start going to tournaments. I actually just got approved for
your vacation,
the Lancaster trip in Pennsylvania, as per this recording. So that's going to be happening.
I can't believe that's happening.
It's going to be awesome. I'm going to get knocked out first round. Can you get knocked out first round? I don't think you can.
I don't know.
I don't think you can. Either way, it's going to be awesome. Yeah. So that's what's going on with the t-shirt straw poll. If you would contribute to that, that would be appreciated. The link will be in the description.
As well as floating around Twitter.
Yeah, it's going to be blasted for probably a couple more days. And then we might start the campaign next week. We'll see.
Yeah, depending on our response.
The other thing that's going on right now on the website is The Nation. It is a new little tab guy on the Kanto Nation website that pretty much tells stories of us about Pokemon, how we got introduced to it, how it's affected us, what we think about it, stuff like that. We got three stories going up this weekend. I'm going to try and get them up Friday, I think. My schedule's all wonky now, so I got to get used to that again. But we have one from Pat from Palette. Yellow has written one.
It's probably not the best, but it's...
I am going to write one and maybe have a video with it because there's some stuff that I've been wanting to show you guys, but I haven't had time to do it. Probably going to do that tomorrow. It's going to be great.
We also have the fan art section. Don't forget the fan art section.
Oh, yeah, fan art. There's fan art, too.
If you...
We have fan art, don't we?
We have
Ed
one.
Craze drew something.
Yeah, Ed Craze drew Yellow's game log, and it's already on there.
Awesome. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you would like us to put by whoever, you can always include your Twitter name, and I'll put your Twitter name in the article.
We'll get you... Yeah, we'll put your name with your work, because you should get credit. This is not plagiarized stuff that we're dealing with here. And, you know, otherwise nobody in the nation's going to know who did it. And that would be pointless.
So, to submit for these sections of the website, you should email us at kantocast@gmail.com. Or for fan art, you can also tweet at us.
So, basically, if you want to submit something, be it fan art or your story about Pokemon, send us an email at kantocast@gmail.com. Or hit us up on Twitter. Fan art only on Twitter. Because
there's not enough characters
unless,
for a story.
Unless you can describe your Pokemon experience in 130 characters or less.
I will embed the tweet.
That would be that would be a challenge. I kind of want to do that now.
No.
I won't.
No.
I'm way too wordy. You got anybody who's received an email from me knows that I blabber on like constantly most of the time. So just send us an email for any of that stuff if you want, or send us a picture on Twitter. Or you can email us a picture too. That's fine. So there it is, The Nation, a new part of the website for you guys, built by us, made by you.
That works.
That's a classic tagline. And so with that, I guess we'll just, that's all that's happening right now in the world of KantoCast that I can share with you. There's lots of other announcements coming, so look for that.
They're all in the actual happening, or...
The timing has to be right.
Like, we're working on stuff, but we can't announce it until we're comfortable that it's going to actually be ready to launch.
Just know that it's coming, and it will be awesome. So, we're going to get out of here. Thank you for listening. We appreciate you. As always, I am Blue.
I'm Yellow.
And we will catch you next time.